somebody a harmonium player or no? Yes. You can, if I sing Jai Radhamadava, you can play?
Oh.
Yeah, maybe. That's a good answer. Maybe not too, right? Jai Radha Madhava. His Divine Grace is He Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Kratharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Sambheda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Yatai Gorpi Manandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Ji Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 9. We're going to discuss two different texts. Texts 34 and 35. The person speaking is God. Yeah, Lord Vishnu is speaking to Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, or subcontractor. And the period of time is in the early morning of one of Brahma's days, where that portion of the universe that's been dissolved during the partial annihilation has to be recreated. Lord Brahma has finished a series of very beautiful, powerful prayers to Lord Vishnu, seeking the creative potency, the capacity to do this very difficult service. He's praying for protection from the pride of doership, false sense of carrying out his duties in that mode of doership. And third is, he's praying for the capacity to bring about the remedy for those who are going to be in the created world and have forgotten the personality of Godhead, and as a result they're suffering enormously. And he's outlined in those prayers what kind of suffering, how it works. So Lord Vishnu is responding, offering a whole series of benedictions as requested by Brahma. He's just very generously, by his speaking, he's empowering him. So here's, I'll read the previous verse, just for refresh. When you are free from the conception of gross and subtle bodies, and when your senses are free from the influences of the modes of material nature, you will realize your pure form, Swarup, in my association. So, by the practice of constant remembrance of the Lord, free from the modes of nature, that's the outcome. No more influence of misidentification with the gross or subtle bodies, nor no more influence of the modes of material nature, directly in the Lord's association, and realization of one's own Swarup. And we heard yesterday, Swarup is in two stages. One stage is, I am constitutionally the eternal servant of the Lord. And the more evolved stage is, this is my particular rasa, or relationship, in service to the Lord. And as we heard Prabhupada say, this spontaneous service attitude continues to evolve and is enhanced on and on. It's not static, it's dynamic. The principles are enshrined within the regulations of Vaidhi Bhakti, what we're doing. But, you know, it's giving us a glimpse of what's next and what's next and what's next by following this process properly. At that time, you'll be situated in pure consciousness. So we have a clear picture of what pure consciousness is. Subtext is, there's a lot of other ideas of what pure consciousness is. Abundantly popular. those that have some idea of, or even concerned about pure consciousness, they have a very different idea. I'm having an interesting dialogue with some college students. One of them is a Chinese student that has a very different idea of what pure consciousness is. They have a problem with there being a personal God in the picture of pure consciousness. And the rationale of why they have that problem is also very interesting. The rationale is, how can there be a personal God? Because in that realm where the personal God exists, if there are other persons, then how can it look like, to me, like there's many gods in the spiritual realm? As you know, do that one again, please. But, you know, that's a reservation. And then another is a classic reservation that says, this is the realm of duality, in their terminology, yin and yang, opposites. And in that realm of opposites, there's form and personality, classic impersonal idea. So in the realm of spiritual, of pure consciousness, how can you have that which is form and personality? Because it's pure consciousness. Like definition by negation. Basically, that's what it is. Whatever is here can't be there because here is contaminated and there must be without this. So pure consciousness, or that there's some recognition of a higher state of consciousness than this plane. Like, you know, there is, through meditation, they've experienced there's another plane. So that by, in immature stage, the inference by speculation, that plane must be free from what we find here. So it must be no form. There must be no personality. There must be no variegatedness. It's just something. They don't know what name to give it. The Supreme. Or pure consciousness. So I'm just indicating there is an abundance of ideas out there in the spiritual marketplace of what pure consciousness is. The Bhagavatam is giving us very clear consideration of what that pure consciousness is. And it's being bestowed upon Lord Brahma because of his sincerity and his meditation and his austerities and his practice. And he's demonstrated he really wants that. The Lord is bestowing it upon him in the descending fashion. So, this morning's verses, 2, text 34. Since you have desired to increase the population innumerably, he didn't say that explicitly in his prayers, but that's part of his service description. When he signed up, that's what he agreed to do. So, he's going to do that. And expand your varieties of service, you shall never be deprived in this matter, because my causeless mercy upon you will always increase for all time. Again, the spiritual realm is not static, it's dynamic. Short purport. A pure devotee of the Lord, being cognizant of the facts of the particular time, object, and circumstance, always desires to expand the number of devotees of the Lord in various ways. Such expansions of transcendental service may appear to be material to the materialist, but factually they are expansions of the causeless mercy of the Lord towards the devotee. Plans for such activities may appear to be material activities, but they are different in potency, being engaged in the satisfaction of the transcendental senses of the Supreme. So in a very interesting way, Prabhupada has taken Brahma's position as the Prajapati, the original Prajapati, the progenitor of Praja, mankind, and varieties of species, and paralleled that, it's not equal, but paralleled that with the desire of a great acharya like Srila Prabhupada to expand the number of devotees, or even a small follower of the acharya desiring to expand the number of devotees, which may look like something material to someone that doesn't have a sense of the internal potency of the Lord, or acting for the purpose of the interests of the Lord. And that's the way of difference between knowledge in the mode of goodness and knowledge in the mode of ignorance. Knowledge in the mode of goodness, understands very clearly, as Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, what is to be done. And that's the, he uses the language, the introspective sage. And the one who's in darkness considers just opposite. What is to be done is what is not to be done. And what is not to be done is what is to be done. Very different kind of knowledge. So, for the materialist, when they see a devotee of the Lord engaged in something like what they're doing, at least it looks to them like what they're doing, then there's no difference between what they're doing and what the spiritualist is doing. And you can make a list of what devotees of the Lord may do in service to Krishna, and it looks just like what the non-devote, some of the things, buying a house and going to a job and having family and getting married and doing those things, because the subject matter here is involvement in the material energy. Brahma has this concern. We should have similar concern. We're in the material atmosphere. We should be concerned that we not fall prey to the influence of Maya, or bad association, or the modes of nature, or delusion, or the conceptions of material life. And those conceptions of material life are abundant. They're all around us. How do we, and for our dependents, our children, how do we ensure the protection from material conceptions of life? And enshrine and give protection to the spiritual conception of life. How do we do that? We require protection from the Lord. Upliftment and protection of that uplifted position. So, while trying to accomplish that, still we're engaged in our activities of the world. And we're not yet in that mature stage. So, there's risk. And we should be aware. So, the Bhagavatam is giving us very practical, very pertinent instructions. It's dependent upon that connection upon the Supreme Lord and His mercy, which is ever expanding. So, is it possible to desire to expand the number of devotees with a material conception? Answer, yes. As I say, you know, is it possible to desire to distribute numbers of books and do so with an interest in name, fame, and adoration? Certainly. I have a comp. Look how many books that I've distributed, or look how much something I've done. And do so with a motivation that's material, and do so with some sense of material accomplishment. We can import or bring into our devotional practice and devotional service conceptions that are material based, selfish based. The responsibility of the devotee is gradually to strive for the real standard is for the satisfaction of Krishna only. So we have these two definitions of bhakti. One is Narada Pancharatra, Sarvapadi Vinir Muktam Tatparatvena Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. Devotional service is satisfying the senses of the Supreme, Rishikesh, by employing our senses in his service, Rishikena. His senses are to be pleased. That's bhakti. So we can be doing the activities of devotional service and not in that consciousness thinking, my senses, and subtle, the mind, my honor, fame, and distinction, profit, adoration, distinction, labha, puja, and pratishtha. And that's not what devotional service is. It's an impurity mixed in with devotional service. And devotional service is pure. So at least in the sadhana stage, which is our stage, we should be cultivating becoming freed from those tendencies. The selfish tendency, mind or senses, gratifying in the course of devotional service. Cultivating, or the other definition of nectar of devotion, anyabhilashitashunyam gyanakarma adhyanavritam. We should be striving in that direction. We may be here, the goal is up here. While we're here, recognize where we are in with a, you know, acknowledgement, honest self-appraisal of where we are, and strive. And if we strive by right means, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, or if we follow the teachings of Rupa Goswami and cultivate Shuddha Bhakti, even when we're in the sadhana stage, just sadhana, just practicing, it's counted, according to the definition of Rupa Goswami, it's counted as Uttam Bhakti, although it's just practice. What's important is our striving, and striving for the infidelity with the teachings of Rupa Goswami. So the teachings are protection, provided we follow them, or strive to follow them. Even we may be weak and not mature and have our ups and downs, like unsteady devotional service has. It's hills and its valleys. It's ups and its downs. We're doing better sometimes. We're in a weaker condition some other times. Continue striving, abhyasa, towards the standard. And we'll get there. And it, once again, it's counted as uttam bhakti, even in the practicing stage. Here's Brahma, who's in the mature stage. And even in the mature stage, even in the mature stage, the Lord is saying, my mercy is ever increasing. So, what to speak of us in the immature stage, or trying, just beginning stages, the hope that we have is Krishna's merciful nature. Just like align ourselves to that merciful nature and receive it. Strive to receive it better. Like keep our fine tuning going on so we can have a better reception of that mercy. Because that mercy is capable of taking us beyond our tininess and our own limitations to being qualified to do very confidential things at our present level, what to speak of higher and higher levels of service, confidential service to the Supreme Lord. The souls that are in that position, the souls that are in our position, are not different souls. They're just greater or lesser empowerment, or greater or lesser receptivity, or greater or lesser eagerness to receive and be situated in that relationship. So Brahma has that bhav, that spirit, that intention, sankalpa. Lord Vishnu is recognizing it. You've sustained this intention for such, you have my mercy. In the purport, Prabhupada is introducing this time, place, and circumstance, desha kalapatra, or he's saying time, object, and circumstances. So a devotee, embedded in the purport, is the devotee needs to consider what's appropriate for time, place, and circumstance. And it's not always clear what's appropriate, especially in our immature stage of devotional service. Nonetheless, we should be considering to fulfill a desire of the Supreme Lord. In this case, what's being mentioned is expanding the number of devotees. We should be consider how the what's the best, because that's the outcome that's wanted. And if there's something that compromises that outcome or something that contradicts a principle, you know, we're very tuned in and sensitive and, you know, cautious about doing something that's going to end up somewhere else besides where we in the goal, what we want. Can we do this? Just like everybody move up a bit because there's some latecomers and... Very good, thanks. Thanks. So now the next verse is a continuation of the same idea. Brahma is very much appreciated by Lord Vishnu. I mean, we should know that, and this verse is confirming that. We're in the Brahma Sampradaya, so he's like our original Acharya. You are the original Rishi. And because your mind is always fixed on me, even though you will be engaged in generating various progeny, the vicious mode of passion will never encroach upon you. How's that? He's the guna avatar in charge of the mode of passion. And one might think, and if one hasn't read this verse, and wait till you hear the purport, that Brahma is influenced by, because he's in charge of, but the mode of passion. Otherwise, how can he create? If he's not, because the creative principle is passion. And so we listen carefully to the purport. Because he's protected by the personality of Godhead, although he's in charge of and, you can say, in contact with, like Lord Vishnu is never in contact with even Pradhan, or to speak of the modes of nature. He just glances. But Lord Brahma, he's hands-on. He's not remote. He's handling the mode of passion. He's dealing with it. He's engaging that mode of passion in the Lord's service. So it would seem that he would be contaminated or infected by or influenced by. We're hearing very explicitly and very clearly he's not. Why? A and B. A, his mind is fixed upon the personality of Godhead. And your mind being fixed on the Supreme Pure, you're pure by that contact. B, the Lord is giving his promise to him. I'll protect you from that. I mean, even if he didn't give the explicit promise, A is sufficient. But he's like, you know, double lock. I'm giving my promise. My benediction is there upon you. On the condition that your mind is... So when we want protection, we now know how to secure that protection. We can also know that if our mind is not fixed, we're vulnerable. So one who's vulnerable needs to be very careful. Like, you know, be very cautious. And when you're very cautious, you're not just depending upon your own capacity, you're depending upon, for a devotee, we're depending upon the protection of the Lord. So we can do that in a sadhana stage, or we can do that in the spontaneous stage, or we can practice in the lower stage at present. If he needs to, like, jump around, he can go in the back row. And if you want to, you're okay. You can stay here. Fine. Okay. Here's the purport. I'll read the verse again, then the purport. You are the original Rishi, and because your mind is always fixed on me. Even though you will be engaged in generating various progeny, the vicious mode of passion will never encroach upon you. Think how that might apply to our lives. Again, the consideration is dealing with the material energy. It's a common, like, standard question for grihasthas and those who aren't grihasthas. How to deal with the fact that we interact with the material energy so much. This isn't so, this is personalism, it's not impersonalism. Big, big difference. Impersonalism says, Shankaracharya says, you cannot make spiritual progress unless you become a sannyasi. You know that? That's like explicit. Explicit. I could tell some stories about that, but explicit. If you want to make spiritual advancement, take sannyas. Can't even begin to make spiritual advancement. Can't even begin. You can like do a warm up or like, you know, play in the sandbox, kind of like playing around. But really, you can't, if you want to get serious, you have to renounce. Sannyas. All the way. And that's like strict. Otherwise, you know, no spiritual advancement. So, this is dealing with, for devotees that don't have that impersonal view, they have a personal view, where's the protection? And it's A and B. Fix the mind, receive the descending mercy of the Lord. And although, what to speak of Lord Brahma, creating a universe, ourselves, if those conditions are, if that's this qualification that we carry and the dependency mood that we have, protection is there. The vicious mode of passion will never encroach upon you. Purport. The same assurance is given to Brahma in the second canto, chapter 9, verse 36. Being so favored by the Lord, Brahma's schemes and plans are all infallible. We had these previous verses, in addition to Swarup, like spiritual form, there was Swarat. And Swarat means independent. So as independent as the Lord is, the devotee is independent as the Lord is, by the empowerment of the Lord upon the devotee, independent of specifically the modes of nature. Not independent of the Lord, like we were discussing, with not independent in all circumstances, but dependent upon the Lord, fully independent. So now here's plans and schemes. Like, that doesn't even sound nice. Sounds like, you know, plotting and subversive and, you know, independent. And but the devotee has to consider Desha Kalapatra, how to expand the number of devotees. So is Lord Chaitanya considered how to help the impersonalists, how to help the materialists, you know, the ways and the means, time, place, circumstance. So we also have to consider following Lord Chaitanya. We have the basic, you know, the holy name. And some of the teenage boys were asking this question yesterday about, you know, well, what about, where do we place emphasis, was basically the question. Isn't like the holy name everything and you can just like forget everything else, just the holy name? And then the other way around. What about people that have an inclination for other things, they do lots of service, but they don't have an attraction for the holy name? Like, what about that? So like that, you know, prioritizing, and how do you, this balance question, or like, what's the big picture of bringing a little spark? Here's Prabhupada's phrase. I heard this on a morning walk, and then I heard it several times in lectures. He's saying, preaching means you see a little spark, and he moved his hand like this, and you fan the spark. Not too much. Not too little. Fan the spark. And that preaching means the spark becomes a flame. And then the very expert preacher takes the flame and makes a big blaze, and his eyes got barely big. That's the expert preacher. But so it's time, place, and circumstance. What's appropriate? What's not too much and too little? Fan the spark. Time, place, and circumstance. So Brahma's considerations of time, place, and circumstance, plans and schemes, will be infallible. He's giving him the empowerment. The third question, the third wish that he had, I'm going to be creating this thing, the universe, and in the universe there's going to be living entities. I'm creating the situation where they're going to suffer awfully. Please give me the empowerment to bring the remedy. So this is the empowerment. It's just his saying so. Again, this is another teaching that Prabhupada gave, that when within an instruction comes the empowerment to carry out the instruction, or the capacity to carry out the instruction. Whether coming from Krishna, like control the mind. So the devotee may say, can you give me another instruction? I'd like another instruction. What is easier, please? But within, however easy, simple, or difficult, within the instruction is the capacity to carry out the instruction. That's the realization, and that's also the faith of the devotee. The faithful devotee will realize it's true. And those that are not, several places in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, those that don't have faith in my instructions, they're defeated. And those that have faith in my instructions, they're successful. They realize within the instruction is the potency to carry it out. Full capacity. Just have faith in the instruction. So here's Lord Vishnu giving the instruction or the benediction, as requested by Lord Brahma, to be able to give the remedy to those souls in the creation that he's making to get relief. And he's the original preceptor of our disciplic line, so, you know, we're protected too. Just follow. Here's another one. This is one of the Stump the Swami questions that comes up. How come Lord Brahma made a mistake? He's up there, and he made a mistake. He made two mistakes. So how do we understand that? If he can make a mistake, what about us? You know, that kind of thing. If sometimes Brahma is seen to be bewildered, as in the 10th canto, he is bewildered by seeing the action of the internal potency, that is also for his further advancement in transcendental service. Arjuna is found to be similarly bewildered. All such bewilderment of the pure devotees of the Lord is specifically meant for their further advancement in knowledge of the Lord. So I hope that gives you some relief. Because I know for some devotees that's like a problem. It is a faith problem. So there's two things. The one that's mentioned here is in the 10th canto, where Brahma becomes bewildered. But it's the bewilderment is the influence of the internal potency, which is quite distinct from our bewilderment, from the external potency. And the internal potency, by the Lord's will, as with Arjuna, by the Lord's will, Brahma is put into a position where he becomes bewildered. Why? So that it will increase his faith and improve his devotional service. So what happened was, one day in Krishna's pastimes, Krishna killed the Agasura demon. It just so happened that Brahma happened to be planning to visit Krishna, and he was hovering aloft in his vimana, his swan carrier, And he saw the whole thing happen. Like the whole Leela, he saw it. It wasn't like a cartoon that he saw in Krishna Vision or something like that. He saw the pastime. And he was amazed. And he began to think. By the influence of the internal potency, he began to think, what is the extent of the mystic power of this little boy? I'm the, you know, creator of this universe. And I just have a portion of his potency, mystic power. I have great mystic powers. But this little boy, what's the extent of it? So he started thinking in that direction. And then the next thought was, let me examine. I'll do something mystical and I'll see what Krishna does. Now that's not good for a devotee to do in relation to a superior, what to speak of Krishna. But that's, you know, by the influence of the internal potency, that's what he started to do. So right after killing Agasura, it was time for lunch. We're hungry, let's go have lunch. So they sat down and in a circle they started having their lunch. And the cows were grazing and Brahma took the cows and by mystic power took them. Not like, you know, took them by rope. And just mystic power, just put them in a cave. And then sealed the cave. And when the cowherd boys saw that the cows were missing, they, you know, they're cow protectors. They had, let's go find the cows. Krishna said, you stay here, finish your lunch, I'll find the cows. He's the leader. He's like going to take care of protecting the cows. So while Krishna's gone, Brahma steals the cowherd boys and puts them in another cave. Seals the cave. And comes back to see the scene of the crime. What's Krishna going to do now? Do you know the rest of the Leela? And when he saw what Krishna did, whew, he was bewildered. He was amazed. The sequence that followed that. And then he offered his wonderful prayers. And, you know, Kshipram Bhavati Dharmatma. It was a very bad Sudur Achar behavior. This is a proper example of that verse from Bhagavad Gita. Api chet sudara charo bhajate mama nanyabhak. Sadur eva samantavya. And Krishna corrected the problem. Kshipram Bhavati Dharmatma. He restored Brahma to a wiser and more enlightened position. He had helped him in further advancement in transcendental service to the Lord. Further advancement in knowledge of the Lord. So he, not like he didn't have knowledge, not that he was in ignorance, but further. And the other situation, becoming attracted to his own daughter. That's very bad. But he gave up that body, that by mental power, and accepted another body. Just like that Brahma's capacity. Krishna corrected. And that's part of the protection. Is it's not just our own effort, but it's our effort plus Krishna's protection. That's the position of Bhajate Mam Ananya Bhak, one who is situated in undivided devotional service. The blessing is one has Krishna's protection. The internal potency is acting. In the purport, Prabhupada makes reference to Canto 2, Chapter 9, Text Number 36. Does that sound familiar to any of you? That's part of the just after the Chatur Sloki verses of the Bhagavatam. It's we have such a rich resource. We're so fortunate. There's Sri Brahma Samhita that describes much of the process of creation and what Lord Brahma does and realizes. Then we have the second canto of the Bhagavatam, same in the third canto here in the Bhagavatam. We have these multiple references of the Creator. And the Supreme Person who empowers that Creator. Like, it's such a science, and multiply described, so we can see it from different angles. So here's 9:36. This is one of the Chaturasloki verses of the Bhagavatam. Help. 36. That's 35. Yeah. This is the final one. Etavan eva jigyasyam tatva jigyasu natmanaha anvaya vyatire kabhyam sa yat syat sarvatra sarvada. Translation. A person who is searching after the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, must most certainly must search for it up to this. What's this? This is a pronoun referring to the previous verse where there's this position of pure devotional service. Understanding, here's 35. O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Behold my mystic power. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created, and at the same time am outside of everything. This Upanishadic double talk, I call it. He's within everything and he's outside of everything. Everything is within him and everything is not within him. So up, that's the this, up to this. You know, the position of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, up to the position of the Lord's inconceivable oneness and difference with all things that exist. Or as Prabhupada said very succinctly, there's two things. There's Krishna and there's Krishna's. And there's not a third thing. There's nothing outside of that which comes from Krishna. There's no void in creation. Void means something where there's nothing. So it's either something or it doesn't exist. There's no void. There's Krishna or Krishna's. There's not a third thing. So there's a relationship between Krishna's and Krishna. The energetic expansions and the personal expansions and the partial expansions and Krishna. There's an inseparable oneness and there's a difference between that which is expanded and the source of the expansion. Up to this, one should search after the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in all circumstances, in all space and time, both directly and indirectly. So it's a long purport. I'm not going to give a discussion so much on the verse. Prabhupada is referring to this verse as an assurance that Lord Vishnu gives in the second canto and Lord Vishnu is giving to Brahma here in the third canto. Provided, so this is how it applies to us as well as to Brahma. Provided we're very sincere, pause, because sincerity is something that can also always grow. It's not static, it's dynamic. Our capacity for anything, if it's on the spiritual plane, it will grow. Like that's one of the litmus tests. People ask, how do I know if I am progressing. So one is the spiritual side is ever increasing, and the other is the material side is ever decreasing. So the unsteadiness of anishtita bhakti, a sign that we're advancing, is the amplitude of the sine curve diminishes. The ups and the downs diminish and it becomes more steady. Up to the position of steady, nishtha, and then following nishtha, the successive stages. But we're not at the stage of ruchi and asakti and bhava and prema. We're at the stage of unsteady, anishtita bhakti, and it's approaching steady. And it's approaching steady is the ups and the attraction is progressively, the plane of the sine curve is moving, and the amplitude of the sine curve is decreasing. Steady increase of attraction for the activities of devotion, and a decreasing attraction for illusory existence and pleasures and possessing and controlling and owning and proprietorship and all that stuff discussed in previous verses. That's made possible by the relationship with Krishna. Because Krishna has those qualities, and one who approaches Krishna and becomes progressively more and more fixed upon Krishna manifests those qualities. So the second canto verse is saying, the last of the Chaturshloki verses, is the inquisitive spirit, the searching after the goal, striving to reach Krishna and understand Krishna not by speculation but by Krishna's disclosure. The desire for that, always present and ever increasing, will bring us to the conclusion. And that's an instruction from the second canto, and here is a promise. You continue to do like that, you won't be touched by the mode of passion. You are the original Rishi, and because your mind is always fixed on me, even though you will be engaged in going to the Microsoft office and doing your work. No, he didn't say that. Even you may be engaged in your affairs, your worldly activity. The vicious mode of passion will never encroach upon you, provided we're situating ourselves within the instructions and striving to fulfill them. We're remembering them, we're bringing them inside. Shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhavaha. There's the protection. And then one can be making spiritual progress in our present circumstances. And, you know, that's good news. It's not just, oh, I get to stay in my present circumstances. But it's good news that it's not something artificial. It's not a one or a zero. It's a gradual progression according to our nature and our capacity to move towards the stage of perfection. It's not that we have to renounce the world. Something that I've concluded with this. Something that I've understood a little bit. Why it is that particularly with people from an Indian background, birth, when some family member, a devotee, practicing devotee, starts taking an interest in Krishna consciousness, some of the family members start to panic. It has to do with this impersonal notion that you have to like trash everybody and everything and give up everything and become renounced, and then you can make spirit, you know. So their message is, you know, be religious but don't be fanatic. And I think you're becoming fanatical because you get up in the morning and you chant your japa, and you know, you have these dietary restrictions, you don't eat the things that we like. So, you know, you're becoming fanatical. And the concern is, you know, you're going to like run off and join an ashram and like renounce your family and your responsibilities and, you know, all the things that we as concerned family members, parents, or whoever, think, you know, you need to do those things. You know, it's a little bit like in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, the exchange between Daksha and Narada. Narada took the 10,000, no, sixth canto, excuse me, 10,000 sons of Daksha and the 1,000 sons of Daksha, the Haryashvas and Savalashvas, and because he saw that they were qualified, that they need not enter into household life and do all that stuff in household life, because they were qualified to enter into his bhakti program, his brahmachari ashram. And Daksha was furious. First time he didn't say anything, but the second time he said a lot. And insulted Narada. And his rationale was like that. You're the so-called speaker of the message of the Vedas, and you're depriving these boys of that which they need to do in order to become purified. You have to go through the Grihastha ashram and all the entanglements of Grihastha ashram to be on the other side of understanding, whoa, it wasn't what I thought it would be, I want to renounce it. That was his rationale. And if one is, that's not like the purpose of Grihastha ashram either. Like, just suffer a lot so you realize that, whoa. That's not the reason. But that's the impersonal notion. Or this even this other idea, the karmakanda idea. You need this, like, little staircase to reach the stage of spirituality. You need to, like, do lots of material stuff in a religious way in order to become, to reach the platform of spirituality. But it's not true. What material things are going to take you to spirituality? Anyway. It's not true. You just follow the formulas and you're going to end up yatama tatapat. It's not true. It's not true. And one of the persons in the class yesterday evening was trying to say it's true, and we had a little disagreement. He came up afterwards and wanted to, like, assert his point again. It wasn't true. It's not true. You can have your opinion, but it's not true. According to Guru Sadhu Shastra, you know, it's not true. But for grihasthas, it's mindfully, there's a goal. For sannyasis, there's a goal. There's an ashram that's appropriate for this position and that position. The goal is the same, and the principles, how we apply the principles are different, but the principle is the same. And that is Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. The spirit behind grihasthas doing XYZ things in their duties, fulfilling their duties of grihastha ashram, should have that objective. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. And the mode of life of a sannyasi, externally it's different, but the principle is the same. For the pleasure and satisfaction of the senses of the personality of Godhead. This may be suited for this person, that may be suited for that person, the principle is the same. The principle of elevation is the same. The form is different, but the principle is the same. And that's what sarvatra sarvada. One should be searching for this in all circumstances, in all time, place, and circumstance. Exactly what Prabhupada is saying about Lord Rama, of wanting to do his service, of increasing praja. My goodness, that's involved in material energy. Those of you that have children are well aware that it's like involved in the material energy. You have children. And how to do that service where you don't become materially entangled. Searching for the absolute, serving the senses of the Supreme Personality of God in the course of those activities. It's not just like you've got a license for sense gratification because you're a householder. That's not what household ashram is. It's a formula by the Personality of God to appropriate for my particular psychophysical nature to engage senses in the service of the master of the senses. What's pleasing to Krishna in the course of family life, grihastha life, going to work, and doing all the things. The principle needs to be active, and one needs to be actively pursuing that principle, and that will progressively on and on and on in the mood of service, carry one to the position of spontaneous service into the position of love of God, into the position of what your rasa is in the spiritual world, from the proper application of that principle. And the Bhagavatam is helping guide us and reassure us, follow the principle, there's protection. And the ability to bring that message into the lives of others, that also requires empowerment. Those who so desire the increasing the numbers of devotees, not for material, you know, reason, but a spiritual reason. Maybe some of you have seen this. There's a map that goes, you know, from the world map of the spreading of religions in the world, and you go over timelines, and it shows like increasing, decreasing, and you know. And there's this thing about, you know, you won't be able to propagate a religion unless you have more than two children in a family. Because just do the math, and if it's, you know, husband and wife, and they have two children, you're not increasing. It's going to shrink the religion. So then you have to go for religious conversion. And so one of the ways of Islam is just have lots of children. And maybe I just looked, because there's this like timeline of Osama bin Laden, and his father, you know how many children his father had? 60 children. One father, he had 20 wives and 60 children. That's one way to propagate a religion. And then, you know, you train your children to like kill off anybody else that's not your religion. That's another way to propagate. So that's not our program. Our program is, you know, we want to go back to Godhead. And we want to increase the numbers, not for like, you know, yay, we got more numbers, but so that to fulfill the desire of the personality of Godhead. We want pure devotion. We want persons to go back to Godhead, or at least have the opportunity. And very compassionately, Prabhupada saw that even a little bit of devotional service will be to the eternal spiritual credit of that soul. So he knew very well. I mean, he was explicit. Remember sitting in a lecture, and Prabhupada was saying, many of you who are here today won't be here going into the future. That's okay. Because a little bit of spiritual progress that you've made, he was like, blunt. Then he was saying, but initiation is for those who are serious. And described that process. But those that... if that doesn't happen, that's fine. Because this eternal... His interest was genuine compassion on the platform of the soul. On Sunday, I'm going to make a presentation on compassion. This is what I've been doing in colleges. So, this is one of the points. Compassion goes to the soul. Not increasing the numbers. That was Brahma's interest. Souls that are going to come into this place that he's created and have to suffer, how to relieve their suffering, how to give them the opportunity to get relief, ultimate relief from suffering. He's being given the empowerment to do that. Because his mind is fixed upon the Supreme Lord and simply wants to serve the Supreme Lord's interest. That's real compassion, the seed of real compassion. Okay, so I'll end there. See if there's any comments, questions.
Can I start?
Okay.
Maharaj, you have a very vivid memories of Srila Prabhupada's lot of instruction and examples. And you use time, place, circumstances many, many times to that.
Well, because it's in the purport.
Yeah. So what is the most striking example of time, place, and circumstances Srila Prabhupada has exhibited in your mind?
here's one. India and America. And in America, he followed the system that he knew in India. That is, men participate. But he saw, here's the situation in America. So he then accepted women in the association of his followers. And then I remember that when he introduced wearing devotional clothes, it was, he had women wearing saris, and because we didn't, you know, didn't have access to what, to saris, so they wore saffron saris. And he gave created a new name, Brahmacharinis. There's no such word, but he created it. Brahmacharis and Brahmacharinis. And there's the Brahmacharini ashram and the Brahmachari ashram. No such thing in India. And he had women engaged in deity worship on the altar in America. He didn't do that in India. Culturally. When Prabhupada installed, he was invited to Jaipur to conduct a Pandal program by the Queen of Jaipur. So at the Queen of Jaipur, after the first day, she was so moved by Prabhupada's spiritual presence, she wanted to give him a gift. She said, I have a whole museum filled with Murtis of Radha and Krishna. You can take your pick in their ears. So he picked. They picked Radha Govinda. In the presence of the Queen of Jaipur, with sannyasis on the stage, he had Mother Jamuna do the Pran Pratishtha. In Jaipur. And then when it came to Vrindavan, he didn't have his own members. He had the Goswamis of Vrindavan do the Pran Pratishtha. Because if it wasn't done by them, they would criticize there was faults in it. If it was done by them, they wouldn't criticize. Time, place, and circumstance. Initially, Prabhupada was not involved in marriages. He saw the necessity of marriages. So he personally engaged in marriages. Then he saw these Western boys and girls, they have a hard time maintaining marriages, so he stopped his personal involvement. He was previously, you know, performing the wedding ceremonies as a sannyasi. Not done. Personally. Like, didn't have somebody, and he was presiding. He did it. He saw there's problems. So he stopped. Time, place, you know, adjusting. Very practical. Time, place, and circumstance. Those are just some of the outstanding ones, but he was not stuck in a paradigm. He was dynamic, practical. He saw what worked and then adjusted. And if saw that that was needing some adjustment, he would adjust. He wasn't unwilling to adjust according to what's practical. So as he writes in Nectar Devotion, there's principles and there's details, and principles are not subject to adjusting, and details are. In fact, it's mandatory. It's the obligation of an acharya to see to the details, and that the followers of that acharya can come to the position of Krishna consciousness. Something else? Okay.
There was a reference you made in a purport, Srila Prabhupada made, and you spoke about this false ego, or how Brahma, you told us a pastime where Brahma stole the cowherd and stole that. Now, did Brahma act on a platform of false ego, or it's a Lord's pastime? I mean, how was...
What we just read, I can read it again, but he's saying it was the influence of the internal potency. That's not false ego. What he did was sudurachar, but that sudurachar was inspired by the internal potency of the Lord. That's what Prabhupada is saying. So not false ego. If sometimes Brahma is seen to be bewildered, that's like, you know, conditioned soul becomes bewildered, as in the 10th canto. He is bewildered by seeing the action of the internal potency. That is also for his further advancement in transcendental service. Arjuna is similarly found to be bewildered. All such bewilderment of the pure devotees of the Lord is specifically meant for their advancement in knowledge of the Lord. Okay, it's a short class. Fantastic. No questions. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.